ฏิบัติกระทั่งแต่สามีนามสเตสุสวัสดีวิบูรณ์ปิศาจในนิพพานสุสุนิพพานสกัดที่สุดSalakaya Chakshu Samanatam Zena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namo Sri Chaitanya Manavishtam Stapitam Vena Vitale Sayam Vipakadamayam Vadati Sarpandantika Vansakapadubhyascha Kripasindhubhyakata Patitanam Pakanebhyo Paisalebhyo Namo NamoAfter Vasudeva had returned from Gokul Mahavan on the other side of the Yamuna, carrying Krishna across the Yamuna and placing Krishna in the lap of Madhya Soda and taking the girl child back, who was actually Yogamaya.Then the doors and inside and outside the house closed, and the inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child, and thus they awakened from their beds. Thereafter, all the watchmen very quickly approached King Kamsa, the ruler of the Bhoja dynasty, and submitted the news of the birth of Devaki's child. Kamsa, who had awaited this news very anxiously, immediately took action. So why did he await it very anxiously?
Because of the prophecy.
That the eighth child of Devaki would kill him. And this was the eighth child, he had killed six previous children, and one appeared to be a miscarriage, but actually that seventh child was Baladev, who was transferred by Yogamaya to the womb of Rohini. So Kamsa was just waiting for the child to be born, and then the watchman approached Kamsa, although it was very late at night, and told him, "We have heard the crying of the child. The eighth child has taken his birth." Kamsa immediately got up from bed, thinking, "Here is Kala, the supreme time factor, which has taken birth to kill me." Thus overwhelmed, Kamsa, his hair scattered on his head, at once approached the place where the child had been born. Devaki helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa, "My dear brother, all good fortune unto you, Kripana Kuronam Shati, don't kill this girl." snusayam tava kalyana striyama hantumarhasi. Don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman. My dear brother, by the influence of destiny, you have already killed many babies. Each of them is bright and beautiful as fire. But kindly spare this daughter. Give her to me as your gift. By the influence of destiny, you have already killed my babies. Vishnathakavati Thakur said, fearing that Kamsa would become angry after she criticized him for his cruelty in killing her previous sons, Devaki said, it is my fate. What fault is there in you? She then expressed her pitiful condition, praying that Kamsa should not make her arms devoid of this child. My Lord, my brother, I am very poor. Being bereft of all my children, I have nothing. But still I'm your youngest sister, and therefore it would be worthy of you to give me this last child as a gift. Sukadev Goswami said, piteously embracing her daughter and crying, Devaki begged Kamsa for the child. So, what a situation. You can just imagine what kind of a person this Kamsa is. Because who could stand up to this type of a, you could say, pressure, just looking at it from an external point of view of is crying, Mataji, with a newborn baby, and the other babies had already been killed by him. She's begging him, and there's practically nothing to fear. She's begging him, let me have this child. And Kamsa was so cruel that he chastised her and forcibly snatched the child from her hands. Purport, although Devaki was crying like a poor woman, actually, she was not poor. And therefore, the word used here is dinavat. See, that's like a poor woman, not poor. She had already given birth to Krishna. Therefore, who could have been richer than she? Even the demigods had come to offer prayers to Devaki. But she played the part of a poor, piteously afflicted woman because she wanted to save the daughter of Yashoda. Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense, what? What's the next word? Okay, that's one guess. Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense Swartha Unmilita. Swartha, what does Swartha mean? Swartha. English? Selfishness. Uprooted Unmilita. Mulita. Mul root. Uprooted. All relationship with his sister because of his intense selfishness. Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to, you don't even want to think about it. I mean, think about a little baby or something, and this is this disheveled selfish asura, Kamsa. He grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. The child, who was Yogamaya Devi, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu. So, Satadastatsamudpatya. Sadyo Devyam Varamgata Adrishyata Anuja Vishnu. So Anuja Vishnu means what? Anuja means the younger sister of Vishnu. So if Krishna is born in Mathura, and this is just simply Devaki's daughter in from Gokul, how is she the younger sister of Vishnu? So this point is raised by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who explains, already explained, and will explain it. It comes up a few times perhaps, that Krishna is also born of Yasoda. He's actually the son of Yasoda. And also this is the younger sister, for the Yasoda gave birth to twins, actually. And the younger sister, the younger one, was this Yogamaya. And then Vasudev Devaki gave birth to Krishna, but not Vrindavan Krishna, but Vasudev Krishna. And he appeared first in his actual form with Chaturbhuja, in forearms. And then that forearm form, they requested him to hide that forearm form, and he returned to having a two-arm form, and then Vasudev carried that Vasudev Krishna to across the river Yamuna and to the lap of Yasoda, who had just given birth, and that Vasudev Krishna merged into the original Krishna, the Swayam Rupa Krishna. And at that time, Vasudev took the girl child back, and this is the girl child who is the younger sister of Vishnu, Anuja. Yatta Anuja Vishnu. Adrishyata, seen. Anuja Vishnu. Sa Ayudhya Ashta Mahabhuja. She had Asta Mahabhuja. She had eight mighty arms, Sa Ayudhya, with weapons. So she went up into the sky. She appeared. She slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi, the goddess Durga, with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. Purport. Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone. But since she was Yogamaya, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the youngest sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yasoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's younger sister? So the goddess Durga was decorated with flower garlands, smeared with sandalwood pulp, and dressed with excellent garments and ornaments made of valuable jewels. Holding in her hands a bow, a trident, arrow, shield, sword, kanchala, disc, and club, and being praised by celestial beings like Apsaras, Kinaras, Urugas, Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas, who worshipped her with all kinds of presentations, she spoke as follows. So this Durga Devi was actually Kamsa's worshipable deity. He was a worshipper of Durga and Lord Shiva. So he was so amazed that his worshipable deity was coming here and speaking to him. So she spoke as follows. O Kamsa, kim maya hataya manda. What is the use of trying to kill me, O Manda? Manda, you are less intelligent, you are a fool. Jatta kalu tavantakrit yatra kva va purva shatrur mahimsi kripana vritti. The Supreme Personality, what is the use of trying to kill me? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is been your enemy from the very beginning, who will certainly kill you, has already taken his birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children. Kripanam vritta, unnecessarily, ma, do not. Your former enemy has already taken his birth. Don't try to kill the children. What is the use? So after speaking to Kamsa in this way, the goddess Durga, Yogamaya, appeared in different places, such as Benares, and became celebrated by different names, such as Annapurna, Durga, Kali, and Bhadra. After hearing the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Thus, because, after all, he was thinking that who was born of Devaki? Durga Devi. And this is his worshipable deity. So he was struck with wonder. Because Durga, the goddess Durga, had become the daughter of Devaki. Since Devaki was a human being, how could the goddess Durga become her daughter? This was one cause of the astonishment. Also, how is it that the eighth child of Devaki was a female? This also astonished him. Asuras are generally devotees of Mother Durga, Shakti, or the demigods, especially Lord Shiva. The appearance of Durga in her original eight-arm feature, holding various weapons, immediately changed Kamsa's mind about Devaki being an ordinary human. Devaki must have some transcendental qualities, otherwise, why would the goddess have taken birth from her womb? Under the circumstances, Kamsa was struck with wonder. He wanted to compensate for his atrocities against his sister Devaki. After all, he had killed six of her children. And how is he going? And there, but he was afraid. Now he was terrified. And he was very, very humbled that Devaki was obviously not ordinary. She was because his worshipable deity, Durga Devi, had taken birth from her. So the verse was, thus he approached his sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudeva. He released them immediately from their shackles and very humbly spoke as follows. Alas, my sister. Alas, my brother-in-law. I am indeed so sinful that exactly like a Rakshas who eats his own children, I have killed so many sons that are born of you. Being merciless and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a Brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. I'm alive or death, I don't know, how am I going to suffer for what I've done? Alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies. And I'm so sinful. So what is the providence that had lied? Because the Akashvani, the voice in the sky, had said the eighth child will kill you. But the word was Garbha. It didn't actually mention whether it was going to be a male or a female, but he assumed it was going to be a male, and he thought that, how is this girl going to kill me? So, and she's Durga Devi, and she's my worshipable deity. So now even providence, I'm so sinful that I believed the omen of providence and killed so many of my sister's children. Even providence has lied. Oh, great souls, your children have suffered their own misfortune. Therefore, please do not lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme, and they cannot always live together. So, now the demon will speak philosophy. He says, what to do? Who can stop anything from happening? This is just the will of providence, of fate. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, they break, they disappear, mixing again with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living beings are annihilated. But the living being, like the earth itself, they're unchanging. They're never annihilated. This is the Kamsavagita Gita. One who does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union with and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life. Otherwise, one will be liberated. There's one old story of how some man had died and his body was placed at the burning ghat, and it was late at night. It was get very close to the end of night, and it would have been so they were trying to decide whether it was auspicious to burn him now or not, or should they wait for the morning. So you see this also in Vrindavan, that when there's a burning, all kinds of creatures arrive. Turtles, when they see the fire reflected in the water, the turtles, you can see them with their heads up just waiting for their pot to be thrown in. And dogs sit nearby patiently going, just waiting for their, if they can get something out of it. So at this particular time, a vulture came by, and also a jackal came by. And the vulture eats in the daytime. So the vulture started preaching very strongly. No, you should wait till the night, till the next morning. Because it's not proper to burn so close to the end of the day. So you should wait till the next morning. And the vulture was thinking, that way I'll have some time to get to the body. And the jackal starts saying, no, don't listen to the vulture, because the jackal eats at night. So he said, anyway, he told the opposite. So he would have his time. You should burn it, that, you know, a different time or something like that, so he could be able to eat the body at night. So when the jackal and the vulture preach, they may speak philosophical words, they may quote shastra, but what is their purpose? It's just their own purpose. It has nothing to do with the purpose of shastra. So Kamsa spoke like this, and also in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, there's the preaching of Aranyakashipu. So he continues. He says, my dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. In the bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization. So why had Kamsa done all these things? Why did he kill them? Because he was simply afraid for his kingdom, and that he was afraid of his own death. So where was the philosophy, the wise philosophy then? So of course, this is something that perhaps we also note, that it is easier to preach to others. But aside from that, Kamsa wasn't going to be able, he didn't even try to practice what he preached. In the bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization, thinking I am being killed or I have killed my enemy. As long as a foolish person thus considers the self to be the killer or the killed, he continues to be responsible for material obligations, and consequently he suffers the reactions of happiness and distress. Kamsa begged, my dear sister, my dear brother-in-law, please be merciful to such a poor-hearted person as me. Since both of you are saintly persons, please excuse my atrocities. Having said this, Kamsa fell at the feet of Vasudeva and Devaki, his eyes full of tears of regret. Fully believing in the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa exhibited his familial affection for Devaki and Vasudeva by immediately releasing them from their iron shackles. When Devaki saw her brother actually repent while explaining ordained events, she was also relieved of all anger. Similarly, Vasudeva was also free from anger. Smiling, he spoke to Kamsa as follows. Of course, Vasudeva, he had brought Krishna across the river. He knew that Krishna was safe. Devaki and Vasudeva, both highly elevated personalities, accepted the truth presented by Kamsa that everything is ordained by providence. According to the prophecy, Kamsa would be killed by the eighth child of Devaki. Therefore, Vasudeva and Devaki saw that behind all these incidents was a great plan devised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the Lord had already taken birth just like a human child and was in the safe custody of Yashoda, everything was happening according to plan. And in fact, Krishna's plan was that he grow up in Vrindavan. He wanted to grow up in Vrindavan and have his pastimes there, surrounded by the loving devotees of Braja. So, everything was happening according to plan, and there was no need to continue their ill feelings towards Kamsa. Thus they accepted Kamsa's words. And Vasudev spoke. O great personality, Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine, this belongs to another. Persons with a vision of differentiation are imbued with the material qualities of lamentation, jubilation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. Soka harsha bhaya dvesha lobha moha madan vitaha mitto grantam napasyanti bavar bavam pritag drisha. They are influenced by the immediate cause which they are busily counteracting because they have no knowledge of the remote supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus having been addressed in purity by Devaki and Vasudeva, who were very much appeased, Kamsa felt pleased, and with their permission, he entered his home. After that night passed, Kamsa summoned his ministers and informed them of all that had been spoken by Yogamaya, who had revealed that he who was to slay Kamsa had already been born somewhere else. The Vedic scripture Chandi describes Maya, the energy of the Supreme Lord, as Nidra. Durga Devi Savabhuteshu Nidra Rupena Samastitaha. The energy of Yoga Maya and Mahamaya keep the living entities sleeping in this material world in the great darkness of ignorance. Yoga Maya, the goddess Durga, kept Kamsa in darkness about Krishna's birth and misled him to believe that his enemy, Krishna, had been born elsewhere. Krishna was born the son of Devaki, but according to the Lord's original plan, as prophesied to Brahma, he went to Vrindavan to give pleasure to Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and other intimate friends and devotees for 11 years. Then he would return to kill Kamsa. Because Kamsa did not know this, he believed Yogamaya's statement that Krishna was born elsewhere, not of Devaki. And after hearing their master's statement, explaining what had happened, the envious asuras, he had advisors who were asuras because he was an asura. The envious asuras, who are enemies of the demigods and who are not very expert in their dealings, advise Kamsa as follows. If this is so, O king of the Bhojendra dynasty, Bhojendra, beginning today, we shall kill all the children born in all the villages, towns, and pasturing grounds within the past 10 days, or even slightly more. The demigods always fear the sound of your bowstring. They are constantly in anxiety, afraid of fighting. Therefore, what can they do by their endeavors to harm you? While being pierced by your arrows, which you discharged on all sides, some of them, who were injured by the multitude of arrows but who desired to live, fled the battlefield, intent on escaping. Defeated, bereft of all weapons, some of the demigods gave up fighting and praised you with folded hands, and some said, appearing before you with loosened garments and hair, they said, O Lord, we are very much afraid of you. So what's happening to Kamsa's false ego while they're speaking like this? Yes, yes, you're reminding me of how powerful, how great I am. Even the demigods fear me. And when the demigods are bereft of their chariots, when they forget how to use weapons, when they are fearful or attached to something other than fighting, or when their bows are broken and they have lost the ability to fight, your majesty does not kill them. You're so kind. Purport, there are principles that govern even fighting. And if an enemy has no chariot, it is unmindful of the fighting art because of fear. Is unmindful of the fighting art because of fear, or is unwilling to fight, he is not to be killed. Kamsa's ministers reminded Kamsa that despite his power, he was aware of the principles of fighting, and therefore he had excused the demigods because of their incapability. But the present emergency, the ministers said, is not intended for such mercy or etiquette. Now you should prepare to fight under any circumstances. Thus, they advised Kamsa to give up the traditional etiquette in fighting and chastise his enemy at any cost. The demigods boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only where there is no fighting can they show their power. Therefore, from such demigods we have nothing to fear. As far as Lord Vishnu is concerned, he is in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he has gone to the forest, and as for Lord Brahma, he's always engaged in austerities and meditation. The other demigods, headed by Indra, are devoid of prowess. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. Just prepare to fight. Nonetheless, because of their enmity, our opinion is that the demigods should not be neglected. Therefore, to uproot them completely, engage us in fighting with them, for we are ready to follow you. As a disease, if initially neglected, becomes acute and impossible to cure, or as the senses, if not controlled at first, are impossible to control later, or an enemy, if neglected in the beginning, later becomes insurmountable. The foundations of all the demigods is Lord Vishnu, who lives and is worshipped wherever there are religious principles, traditional culture, the Vedas, cows, Brahmanas, austerities, and sacrifices with proper remuneration. O King, we who are your followers in all respects shall therefore kill the Vedic Brahmanas, the persons engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities, and the cows that supply milk. So Kamsa was actually doing these things. He was killing Brahmins and cows. And kill the cows that supply milk, from which clarified butter is obtained for the ingredients of sacrifice. The Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice. Ah, that's interesting. Are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. So I'll read that list again and see how much those things are prevalent or absent in the contemporary world. The Brahmins,
the cows. And now they only have like cows. They're like cows, but they're pumped up with hormones and antibiotics, and they're treated so terribly. But anyway, the Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind, control of the senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, sacrifice. These are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu. They are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. What does paraphernalia mean? The words here is Hari Tanu, the parts of the body of Lord Hari. What is paraphernalia? These things are necessary for a godly civilization. And out of these, what are there? There's no Brahmins. There are cows. But look how they're treated. Vedic knowledge. You know what in place of Vedic knowledge is? It's what? And what? Yeah.
Mechanistic knowledge.
Yeah, it's all science. That's what's accepted. People don't have faith in Vedas, but they have faith in, they have no faith in Shastra, but they have faith in science. It's not that people don't have faith. It's not like in the old days people used to have faith and now we just use reason. No, it's just faith and faith. Just faith in different people. Austerity, truthfulness. Huh? Little. Where is it again?
People still have some sense of honesty to some degree.
Yeah?
The last link of religion.
What's your experience with that?
Yes. If people are treated correctly or nicely, it can bring out the good side of them.
Yeah, the honest side. How about austerity? No matter how nice they treat people, they will be austere. They don't want to be. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the way people live, is to avoid the causes of austerity, to control nature so there's no need for austerity anymore. Control of the mind. How do people control their minds? Not through breathing exercises and focus it. Yeah, through television and internet. So they have their mind controlled for them. They don't have to even do it. And senses, how do they control their senses? By
intoxication.
Yeah.
They have a sense of control sometimes when they look at like sports stars and people like that who practice. They have some admiration for somebody.
So they have admiration for it from a distance.
Well, they'll cheer it on.
Yeah. But as far as themselves, maybe the common people are always like that.
They go for some exercise.
Virtual Olympics. You too can be an Olympic star on a computer.
As well as a rock star.
Yeah. What is that? Guitar. You know what's that game? Guitar Hero. Yeah, farm. There's virtual farms. You ever see that?
Virtual farms.
Yeah, they have virtual farms where you can, on your computer. Yeah, Facebook. Yeah, yeah. Farmville. That's what it's called. How do you know?
It
was trying to take over your site. So they have a farm where you can make believe You can purchase seeds and you can plow up an area on your farm and you can sell it and make a profit, and of course with a profit. You use real money for this to buy, you know, to grow imaginary crops.
Real money.
Real money to, yeah, I mean, they take your real money. And there's Guitar Hero, where you can, you know, you can just by going, you could be riffing away on your guitar. And then, and there's another one too, there's Grand Auto Theft. Yeah, and then you can steal cars all day long and not get caught by the police. Or you can get caught by the police too, but just got a virtual jail. I mean, you can do everything only in an illusion within an illusion.
So. In an extremely sophisticated way.
Yeah.
It's baffled people's minds.
Huh?
Completely baffled people's minds.
But I have some virtual reality I heard about where you can have a virtual identity.
Yeah.
And then even in, like in Australia, if you buy insurance with a particular company, then you get some virtual dollars, and then you can afford to buy that, you know, oceanfront property in the virtual world.
Yeah.
And then you can feel better about yourself.
And you can have virtual stores, and people, other people who are members of that community can visit and buy things from your virtual store. Yeah, virtual marriages. Virtual children?
Do they work?
Huh?
Virtually.
Virtuallessly. But yeah, I mean, it's because, as we were saying, that's all the complete mode of passion, which goes to the ignorance where everyone, no one is satisfied with what they are, with what they have, so they have to make up a whole secondary universe existence.
The life is so deadening.
Yeah. And the poor people who took birth before all these things were available, how did they survive?
They had to actually go and work in the fields and deal with the sun and the rain. And
they were primitive.
Yeah. We just have to go to the shop and need money.
You don't need money.
You need money.
You don't need money.
Yeah.
Just need a credit card.
That's right.
Plastic. Do it with plastic. Tolerance. How about sacrifice? These are the different parts. What does sacrifice mean? Tiksva, kritva. What does sacrifice mean?
It's like foregoing something to get something better.
Yeah. Well, they sacrifice. It's a world. Everything is opposite. And you deal with I don't deal with the people of this world. You don't deal with the people of this world. You deal with them in a very limited way. Well, you deal with them. I don't know about all you. Are they happy? What's your impression? I mean, actually, no.
Yeah.
And then I'll ask you.
Definitely not, but sometimes there's a sense of that they feel they are.
They feel they are happy.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
And what kind of people feel themselves happy?
People who have stable situations with their family or nice in their house and are young and things are looking good.
So stability. Happiness. Yeah. What's your impression?
And most of the people I see are struggling to survive. Because working in the post office there, they come and pay the bills. And they're all complaining about the bills and the prices. They look like they've been in a storm for a long time and they come in. They look tired. People look tired to me. But I live in New Zealand, of course. Where it's
and Australia, everyone's there. She'll be right. No one pays bills here.
I don't know. I think New Zealanders, they all want to move to Australia.
So people there aren't happy. And what you went to the university, are people happy? What's your impression?
I noticed that even the ones who are quite well off and have a stable work, they're so dissatisfied. Just constantly wanting something more to enrich their existence. New clothes, new hairstyles, new friends, new farmville.
I saw somehow or another, I saw this show that Apple put on. I saw the first beginning of it, and when the head of Apple came out, they were treating him like he was like an incarnation or something. It was amazing. And then they brought out the guy who put together this Farmville thing, and he was such a jerk. It was incredible. I mean, he was just such a money man. And even, you know, they were showing how they through these applications they were making so much money for the developers, because it was a developers conference, program developers. And they brought out three of the program developers. They had 5 minutes each or something like that. And one of them was the Farmville fellow. I wouldn't buy a used car from him. What to speak of a farm from him? I know this kind of people. He was a real New Yorker. He came out with a Farmville T-shirt on. He was sort of an old man. And then at the end, you know, and he said, everyone should get Farmville, you know, just as if, you know, it was so gross.
Mm-hmm.
It was gross. It was gross.
To make money on the fact that people are dissatisfied.
Well, they want everyone is tired of the city life and the office, and going to the office, and et cetera, and they want to live in the country and breathe good air and. So do it over your computer instead of doing it. So you can think, you can make believe you're doing it. It's just imaginary.
On the point of happiness, some people live in constant anticipation of happiness.
Yeah.
And some people live in stubborn happiness.
Yeah.
Usually it's centered around something like a family.
Yeah.
Then there's all the terrible things going on, they have a sense that the family is bringing them all this joy. But if you go down to the nuts and bolts, you know, it's a lot of difficulty there, even within that family environment. And then there are those who just basically live in happiness of ignorance.
When you were dealing with the young people, because I can't remember that far back, but were the young people that you were dealing with, were they happy? Did it appear they were happy or they were? So if the young people are miserable and running away from home and doing all kinds of things without their parents' knowledge and things like that, how's the family going to be peaceful and happy? So if the young people are miserable, and of course they're going to be miserable because everything is so cranked up for desiring, for enjoying, and the young people are so vulnerable. So how are they going to be happy? You know, and if they're not happy, how is it going to be, if they're not obedient and they just give their family members hell? And then Yeah.
Almost all the young people take intoxication.
Huh?
Almost all the young people take intoxication.
Mm.
So they must be unhappy. They're all, especially in New Zealand, a huge percentage.
In Australia, no one takes intoxication. They're all happy and on the dole. What's the use?
A lot of young people in New Zealand smoke marijuana.
And in Christchurch even, there's so much suicide, is it, or whatever, or something like that. There's really terrible things going on in this little city. Huh?
The highest rate in the world.
In New Zealand. Too mental.
Too much happiness. They don't know what to do with it. So anyway, here's the reason. Because, and this is the demons speaking, and what they're saying is, just think what they're saying. We who your adherents in all respects shall kill the Vedic Brahmanas, the person engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities, and the cows that supply milk from which clarified butter, ghee, is obtained for the ingredients of the sacrifice. Because the Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are the paraphernalia for godly civilization. So the frame of reference that this is being spoken is these, the advisors of Kamsa are saying that we're going to destroy all these pillars of godly civilization, consciously, willingly. Lord Vishnu, the super soul within the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the Asuras, and therefore he is known as Asura Dvit. He is the leader of all the demigods, because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. The great saintly persons, sages, and Vaishnavas also depend on him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. This is how to give Vishnu pain. So this is a sort of bhav. This is the mood, grossly, of the asuras, of someone with a demonic mentality. Everything that is good, we destroy. This is Kali. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus having considered the instructions of his bad minister, Kamsa, who is bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence because he was a demon, decided to persecute the saintly persons, the Brahmins, as the only way to achieve his own good fortune. These demons, the followers of Kamsa, were expert at persecuting others, especially the Vaishnavas, and they could assume any form they desired. After giving these demons permission to go everywhere and persecute the saintly persons, Kamsa entered his palace. Surcharged with ignorance, and not knowing what was good or bad for them, the asuras, for whom impending death was waiting, began the persecution of the saintly persons. How bizarre that it is, this such a description of Kali Yuga and what goes on. My dear king, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. We shall move to Braja, where the son of Nanda Maharaj has just taken his birth. Okay, any questions or comments?
Who were the other children that were killed before Yagamon? The other six?
Oh, there's six. Devaki gets them back later on for a short time. And they drink, even though they're already older. They're six. I can't remember exactly.
Vasus?
Huh?
So
they're
the Vasus, they were cursed.
They were cursed. In the 11th canto, this is described. and then they and they drink the breast milk of Devaki, and because that has been drunk by Krishna, that prasadam purifies them, and then they get back by Krishna's mercy, because Devaki had heard that Krishna brought back the dead son of Sandipani Muni. So she asked Krishna to return her own children. It's in the 84th chapter or 85th chapter of the 10th canto. Any other questions? Come.
It struck me that I never thought of it quite this way before, but hearing it then, that what an experience that would have become to him. He goes to kill this baby girl in a violent way, and then his wish is deeply manifest. And yet, after an experience like that, he didn't transform very much as a person.
The sons of Marici, which is in the 85th chapter. During the age of the first Manu, the sage Marici had 6 sons by his wife Urna. They were all exalted demigods, but once they laughed at Lord Brahma. Because of this improper act, they immediately entered a demonic form of life, and thus they took birth as the sons of Hiranyakashipu. The goddess Yogamaya then took them away from Hiranyakashipu, and they were born again from Devaki's womb. After this, O king, Kamsa murdered them. Devaki still laments for them, thinking of them as her sons. These same sons of Mrityu are now living here with you. We wish to take them from this place to dispel their mother's sorrow. Then, released from their curse and freed from all sufferings, they will return to their home in heaven. By my grace, these 6, Smara, Udgita, Parishvanga, Patanga, Chudrabrit, and Grini, will return to the abode of pure saints. After saying this, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, having been duly worshipped by Balaraj, took the 6 sons and returned to Dwarka, where they presented them to their mother. When she saw her lost children, goddess Devaki felt such affection for them that milk flowed from her breast. She embraced them and took them on her lap, smelling their heads again and again. Lovingly, she let her sons drink milk from her breast, which became wet with milk just by their touch. She was entranced by that same illusory energy of Lord Vishnu that initiates the creation of the universe. By drinking her nectarian milk, the remnants of what Krishna himself had previously drunk, the 6 sons touched the transcendental body of the Lord Narayan, and this contact awakened them to their original identities. They bowed down to Govinda, Devaki, their father, and Balaram, and then, as everyone looked on, they left for the abode of the demigods. Seeing her sons return from death and then depart again, saintly Devaki was struck with wonder. She concluded that this was all simply an illusion created by Krishna. Of the story, too. Let's describe. They had worshipped. They were the sons of Hiranyakashipu. And that's connected with Kamsa, too, with Kalanemi. So Hiranyakashipu, and they were worshipping, they wanted to gain something, and they worshipped someone other than Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu was furious with them. They were either sons or grandsons. And Hiranyakashipu was furious with them for worshipping someone other than him. So he killed them or something, or he cursed them that they would be killed by their own father, who was Kalaneni, who was later killed by Vishnu. Some history is there. There's always history behind everything that happens. In these cases, we can read about the history in other shastra, but in our own cases, we just have to accept that what happens, there's history behind it, even though it's hard for us to know what the history is, but there's history. What do you think of that?
Somewhat fierce, but to accept that. It's difficult for those of us who are
atheists.
Yeah.
But it's also difficult for those of us who are atheists to want to be real atheists, like Kamsa's friends here. That's pretty extreme, isn't it? So we're probably more theistical than atheistical. But what if we don't accept that there's some history behind the present, but we do accept that the present causes the future? Yeah? Everyone accepts that, right? That what we do now, like if you go to school and get a good education, that affects your future. So why don't we accept that the present was influenced by the past?
Maybe it's because we can't understand exactly where it came from. So.
Well, okay, we might not understand exactly where it came from, but still we have to accept the intelligence, to accept the principle.
That's the principle of evolution. It's evolving.
Huh?
Things are evolving. Evolution.
It's only evolution.
The past has evolved to the point where it's now.
One reason is that people aren't very thoughtful.
Well, that's not a good reason. That's a non-reason. So it's not atheistical. It's thoughtlessness. Oh, okay. Now we're calling it a spade, a spade.
A lot of people don't take the time to think about those things. And if you were to ask them,
because they're too busy, you know, and there's so much pressure from the rest of their life. But it seems to be a consequential question. Well, someone who's atheistical, why does he think he's in the situation he's in now?
Chance.
They did it to me. That's what they usually think. They did it to me. They usually point to something, you know, that has made them into the victim of terrible fate. And even in contemporary thought, New Agey type of thought, everyone is really against this victimology stuff. Mm. You know, everyone talks about take responsibility for yourself and who you are. So it's really contemporary.
Mm.
So no one likes this victimology stuff.
Mm. But what do you do if you've seen somebody do something to you, and you can't get past the fact that this person did?
Well, yeah. So, you know, that the best answer to that is that different individuals respond to what happens to you may not be in your control. Not that people don't do things to you, But how you respond is what your responsibility is. That famous little story about, you know, the father who was an alcoholic had the two sons. One was a brain surgeon, one was a Bowery Darrow. And they asked the Bowery Darrow, why did you become the way you are? And he said, well, with a father like that, what else could have happened to me? And then they asked the brain surgeon, why did you become the way you are? And he said, with a father like that, what else could have happened to me? Just a good story.
They were twins.
They were twins in the story. I wonder
if it was actually true. What Mimi told me about it one time is an article in the newspaper. It's true.
It's a true story. I mean, but there's so many people who, some people become strong by their, like, by their fate, and some people get crushed by it.
Mm.
You know, some people. Yeah. So there is freedom how we deal with our fate.
Mm.
And that's the point. You know, and if you look at anyone who succeeded in life, you rarely find someone who's they just floated into success. You know, you talk to anyone and they, everyone has their trials. They had to do work and they had to deal with adversity and they had to deal with adverse situations. And that it makes it strong. By the grace of God, you get stronger by them if you, if you deal with them in a courageous way. And with maybe you need support. Some people don't have support even. Okay. So what's the best I can do with the difficulties that I deal with? Let me do it. Let me go forward with it. Even Prabhupada said that man is the architect of his fate. Didn't he say that? That's a famous saying. Even Prabhupada also said that. Man is the architect of his destiny. So what of the people who don't think, they think that their life is fully out of control, what do they say about that?
The thing is, when you have a specific emotional response to a circumstance, it doesn't feel like you had a choice. It feels like you were forced to respond that way.
Then?
Because the emotion is so strong.
Then?
Yeah.
But how about now? Then is then. But how about now?
You mean in retrospect?
No. How about in the present? Because you can't undo the past.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, according to a particular circumstance, it'll invoke an emotional response that you don't feel like you had a choice.
Right.
To respond that way.
Right, but how about now? Knowing what you know, does that give you more choice? So the past is already done, and you can't undo the past. Our freedom is more now. So then if you say, well, I have such a strong emotional reaction to it, is it possible for me to act anything other than by my strong emotional response? And right? Is that what the question is?
Well, my point would be that you probably find the answer is no. I don't think I can do anything else.
Well, then what would you say to such a person? Say, do you want to do anything else? And how would they respond?
Yes, obviously.
but I can't. Or do you want to?
Mm.
Well, that's the first step.
Mm.
To change the desire, because everything is based on desire.
Mm.
That is at the heart of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm.
And it's also, so many people talk about this, the whole law of attraction thing is all based on that.
Mm.
You attract according to your desire.
Mm.
So if you don't want to change...
Yeah. Well, at the core of it is that you don't want to change. At the core of it.
Well, what you got to change, you got to put gore in the core.
Mm.
Do you want to change? Or not?
Mm.
Well, then stop complaining if you don't want to change. And just...
Generally, it seems like people have both. They have a certain degree of desire to change and a certain degree of desire not to change, and they're in conflict within themselves.
Okay, so... If one side increases, the other side will go down. So which side do you want to increase? So how do you increase your desire to be different than you are and to change and to improve? How do you do that?
You have to investigate what options are available.
A lot of it has to do with association too.
It's just like we saw in that description tonight, comfort.
Yeah.
He has an experience where he's acting according to his nature.
Yeah.
And his worshipful deity appears.
Yeah.
And yet, that should be a transformational point.
It was. But why did he go back to being just old, dirty old Kamsa again?
He answered the association.
He went back to the same friend.
Yeah, and he said, I got this great idea, I should be nice to everyone from now on. And he said, Kamsa, give me a break. You know, they're all afraid of you, you know, and you're going to, now's your chance.
Yeah, so then we can say, within us all is that part that no matter how strong and influential transformational experiences are, we'll still within our heart revert.
But that's not what it says. That's not what this particular incident. If we ask the same people who have been advising us all along, we'll get the same answers.
If the mind is the one that's been advising us all along, if the mind is our bad association, how do we cut out the mind?
Well, we need some other advisors. I mean, if we...
Yeah, on a subtle level, we're reverting back to the same.
I mean, if we have a good mind, and there are people who do have good minds, then it's not a problem. But if you have a bad mind, and you don't know it, that's one thing. But if you have a bad mind, and suddenly you realize that my advisors are giving me so much trouble, then what do we do?
Suffer a lot.
Yeah?
Because you're like waking up. But you still like have this torturous now. You're in contradiction with this mind that's within you.
But at some point you have to. Seems like we have to accept that. That if we keep on the same way of thinking, we're going to get the same results.
Mm.
So therefore, which is another very contemporary.
Mm.
This is what New Age people say all the time. So how do you change your way of thinking? You have to put in new input. You have to get... So what is the way of new input? That we recommend the Hare Krishna Mantra, we recommend Shastra, we recommend association with devotees, we recommend...
The good grains going in after the bad grains in the silo that the old yogi was talking about. Bad grains in there already, and so there's something, you're reaping bad, tasting bad fruits, but good grains that have to be put in. Well, Prabhupada said the penny's in the bank, and every time you say Krishna's name, you stick a penny in the bank. If you're putting pennies in the bank, you might get them again.
talk on a theoretical level, it's very easy. But practically, it's not so easy. And a lot of the not easy part of it is that we want to keep everything the same but change. So that contradiction lives within. So how to deal with that? You can't keep everything the same. Everything will be the same. And then if you want everything to change completely, then you have to change on the deepest level. So much has to do with association.
When Prabhupada in 1932 in Sydney, I got a double decker bus.
Yeah.
And I used to travel around in this bus, and Prabhupada had a paint on the side of the bus, Krishna consciousness, the positive alternative.
That was Prabhupada's idea, or was that Mohanananda's idea? You should have one of those in New Zealand, right? Pulled by a rabbit at his bull after you cut his horns. That would be such an attraction.
You should just get young ones
and try them. Hooked up and being pulled by Ravita's bull. Okay, good night. Something to think about. Tomorrow we go here. What Krishna does, well, from then on, from this time on, comes to live in complete anxiety. And Krishna is not in any anxiety. One can't help but thinking, if Kamsa would just act like a nice fellow, he wouldn't have to be killed. So he caused his own death, that's so clear. And if he didn't put Vasudeva and Devaki in prison, if he didn't try to kill Devaki, there would be no need. So was it the prophecy that caused it? Because he would have said, anyway, I'll be killed. Anyway, everyone has to die. Anyway.
He did say that.
Huh? Yeah. Anyway, he did say it, right? That's it. There's so many ironies in the whole thing, isn't there?
The
comfort within
us is that as well.
Sure. May the Kamsa within be killed by the Krishna within. The atheist within. That fellow wrote a book, Awakening the Giant Within. But how giant the real giant is, he doesn't know. Hare Krishna.